Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
It's a whole new year, people. Woo. New Year's resolution, New Year energy is in all directions. And we've gathered you together because basically we thought that we would have a general bant on the whole idea of New Year's resolutions and apply that to the gaming industry.
Yes.
Because if there's anything that needs upending, it might be the New Year, might be the thing with the games.
Well, 2019 was a very, very interesting year for the video game industry. It wasn't as bad as potentially maybe 2018, but still there was a lot of sort of like weird slides and maneuvers that it made as it tried to retroactively change everything from the previous year.
Yes. Yeah.
And now 2020 in January, with everyone else making New Year's resolutions, we should probably ask that of the people who we give a ton of money to all the time.
Please change.
First up, did you guys make any New Year's resolutions? Usually I don't bother, but I felt it this year.
And
I've got a ring fit.
What are you?
So I've been ring fit in like every day.
Ring fit is your New Year's resolution.
Yes, you work out
365 days a week.
It's really good. Like you do, like it's like a Pilates ring, and you squeeze it, and then it counts your calories and it measures your heartbeat.
You know,
it's really good.
I had a little sample of it, and it was very fun.
Yeah,
and the ring fit adventure
knackers you as well.
Headline,
I mean, I'm very unfit.
Headline of the Tyne and Wear Daily: man dies if ring fit over use.
Man over Pilates himself.
Ring fit found in the Tyne. It's been thrown out the window.
You could frisbee that thing pretty well.
My New Year's resolution is really sad.
Okay.
Oh, no.
My New Year's resolution is by the end of the year to be living with my girlfriend in Wales.
Why is that sad?
Because of the fact it would mean saying goodbye to you people.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a side to that.
Just like many tonal changes there.
If this was the first we were hearing of this, maybe it would be more sad. But I'm going to choose to focus
the
on the positives.
They're hearing of it.
It's true. I'll focus on the positives that you'd be living with your lovely little girlfriend.
Lovely little girlfriend.
Yeah.
You can nip that in the bud in 2020.
What?
Yeah. Talking about toxic
gaming. How's that toxic?
No, we're joking. That is lovable when it comes from you.
What's it? What?
It's just, okay, for the people who don't understand, there's a lovely, 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 lovely boy in here called James Dowles who we take the mick out of every single day.
I don't at all. You're talking about toxic behaviour. You're outing yourselves as the most toxic people around.
I'm not involved in this.
Surrounded by two three-eyed fish.
I tell you what, a 2020 start to to a podcast. You couldn't ask for better than this. There's a lot of energy in this room. Let's scoop it up and put it in the furnace, boys. Ooh. Let's go.
I didn't have any New Year's resolutions, but the one that I was thinking
you
I would
do.
Stop
being toxic for one, carry on.
My one thing that I wanted to do, it wasn't really, you know, is get my speech together. And I wanted to start martial arts is what I wanted to do this year.
Man.
I was ready to get some, like, Fists of Fury going.
You've got some expat karate moves
going on
there.
Yeah, I actually want to learn it. I want to do, like, kickboxing. Like, I don't know. I just want to kick people.
Do Muay Thai. Yeah.
There's classes up at the gym that we go to they do boxercise. So that might be a good start.
Well, there we go. So when you see me in a week, I'll be really
kicking the living hell out of everything.
But that worries me because, this is the thing. I say this from the heart.
You can tell you guys have just come back.
You are a lovely, lovely woman. You're very kind, very generous.
Little lady.
But you're not delicate.
Oh, and you're quite, a delicate flower, I'll have you know.
If there was a word to describe you, it would be clumpy.
Wow.
So you you putting power behind those ham fists that you've got probably would actually be quite deadly.
Like hitting people with a giant fish.
I'll take it, you know.
Anyway, we were going to talk about a game like a giant fish. If you were getting slapped with a fish, that's a full on...
Is that my fist? Yeah. Fish fists.
fish fist fury. Yeah, we did have a plan for this, but I mean, just talk about fish fists for the next 25 minutes. Anyway, yeah, gaming resolutions. We thought we'd see what the industry should try and do to overhaul itself. Because there's like, don't do a Max Payne face at me, Jules.
Hey, speaking of gaming, do you remember fisticuffs on Club Penguin?
No.
No.
What the hell's Club Penguin?
Oh man.
You did not play Club Penguin. You're the same age as me.
No, I didn't play, but I know about it.
I know what it is. I'm doing the thing. But you and Ewan played it.
Yeah, because we are young and virile. But we've played some bit with fish, and you just slap each other with the fish, Ewan. But that fisticuffs, I thought it'd be a funny joke. It is funny.
It's definitely funny when you've got to clarify that it's funny. That's how you know that it's definitely funny. I'm sure the comments will let us know whether they want more banterful podcasts in the future. Chances are they will, but we'll see. Anyway, for the third time, let's talk about what the gaming industry can do to resolve itself in 2020.
Yeah.
Now, we threw different things into a master list that I'm going to sort of read from. One of yours, Jules, one of your suggestions was not altering content after a game has come out, after the review period.
I have a huge problem with this because it actually changed my opinion on Crash Team Racing. Mm. Like, you and I were so excited for that game, and you as well, actually, because you played it like a lot in the past.
I like
as well.
Crash. I remember seeing all the pictures you guys sent of very sad Crash.
Oh, yeah.
You're very
that excitable. Was sad Crash. At the launch event.
And we went to the launch event, like Activision like kindly sent us down there and we played the game. It was fantastic. It was everything we wanted it to be because it was so honest to its own roots. Mm-hmm. And then when they said, oh, we're going to be supporting the game with DLC further down the line, which you can unlock by racing, earning the coins, and doing all that, we were a bit like skeptical. But once we saw it in practice, we were like, that actually works because you're on, and the tour mode like actually was a good idea in principle. But then after the review period stopped, they started putting in much more. They changed the way that the shop works. They changed the reward system that you get. They changed the progression for all of that stuff. And you sit there just going, my review of this game is not reflective of the game that is out there. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge disparagance between the gaming public, the journalists that report on it, and the developers themselves. Mm. And that is a symbiotic relationship that needs to be, like, it needs to be like as fair as possible.
Yeah.
Like, I get annoyed when people like Bethesda, and I will name drop them specifically, say that we won't get games until launch day because it shows that they're trying to hide something from the public. Mm-hmm. That's what it implies. Mm. But I hate it when there's this sort of like broken relationship between us. Like, okay, I'm going to say that this game is good. 3 months down the line, say you pick up the game based on the review that I've done, then it's not the game that I've talked about, and you go, well, that's crap, and you're wrong, and I don't trust your reviews anymore.
I think like it's like obviously like one of the best things that came out of having like, you know, broadband connections left, right, and center is the ability to patch stuff and make it better. But I think that microtransaction stuff, like there's some really egregious examples, like Metal Gear 5's mother base stuff got altered so that if you wanted to continue managing the base that you had in the single player, you had to start paying for it. Black Ops 4 had a storefront put in after the fact. Modern Warfare had one too. I agree with you on that. I think that it feels really disingenuous. Like, you know, people have paid full price for a thing and then you get kind of nickel and dimed after the fact.
It's like Fallout 76, that whole mess that was Fallout 76, like where it could have come out a much better state and then all the drips and drops of it were different to what it actually came out as. And when it came out, it's taken ages to get it built up. Elder Scrolls Online as well, when that was first.
Took
ages to get that. I think this is a different problem I'm talking about where things need to come out in a working state, which I know we'll talk about later.
Yes, I've got that as a separate one.
I think having things come out like, as you promised they're going to be, you just want the game as is, don't you, anything else?
I feel like it's like it's so weird to see publishers not treat the relationship they have with us as like video game journalists with respect, because it's a case of like they don't seem to realize that they need us. Like, I know that a game will sell pretty well because a fan base will be aware of it if they're following the game, but people like us, IGN, GameSpot and all the other ones, they provide free coverage of those games. They push it out to millions and millions of people who will potentially buy it. So why make the audience question their relationship with those media outlets by changing the game that they provide. It means that we have now, theoretically, have to do your written review, your video review, and you need to do a 6 months down the line re-review of it, or even a year down the line. And that's just... you're altering what it is, what GameStead is.
It's more content.
Like joking aside, like yeah, we will be able to like get stuff out of it, but it's just it doesn't feel right.
No, I think that we'll talk about like rushing games to market as like a separate thing, but I think that idea of like fundamentally upending like a progression system or making it so that you have to pay for something that you were getting for free, that's something that you can totally zero in on and be like, that needs to stop. Like either you need to like be upfront about offering, saying what you're offering on launch day, and so people need to know what they're buying into, and know that like you've had fun with the game for a good few weeks. Oh, by the way, now you need to pay 50 pence or a pound or whatever to now speed this timer up or unlock this thing that was there before. That would be the thing that I think genuinely sucks.
It doesn't happen in any other product. Why should we allow it to be? Why should
we
tolerate?
Cats got patched. Cats the movie.
Yes, right. Cats the movie did get patched.
I thought you meant cats as in the actual animal. I was there like, I don't know what you're doing to
they're
your
always
animals.
Getting updates. Yeah. They're just never good enough.
Well, I'm unaware of this. What's happened?
Cats basically came out and there was some CGI problems where Judi Dench still had human hands while she was a cat. So they had to patch it so she had cat hands afterwards, and that's how you could tell the difference.
But it's the first movie to get patched, which is a horrifying precedent because I guarantee they'll start doing that.
Surely there must be loads.
The Shining had like an ending cut out of it and all sorts. Like,
digitally updated though.
No, Kubrick sent it all out to all of the cinemas, and then
to cut out and burn it. Didn't
he was like, cut it out and send it back to me, I can get rid of it. So like, it went out, and then I don't know if it managed to screen, but like, it got patched before released properly.
Yeah, there's been alterations to movies before. I think it sets a horrifying precedent for the idea of digitally patching movies, because then you can be like, well, we changed the ending, or we changed this scene, go watch it again, or whatever. But anyway, in terms of to zero in on a specific thing, I think the idea of publishers or developers altering progression loops by introducing monetary elements post-launch, that sucks. That's the thing that needs to just go away and shouldn't have even become a thing in the first place.
If they want to do stuff like that, it should be huge announcements and done as a like an optional DLC or something like that. If you're going to make huge changes to your games, like this is why games as service is great in practice, but it has a huge problem in the fact that it's a malleable state that constantly keeps changing. When before, it used to be like Red Dead Redemption 1 is probably a good example, because it's like base game, and then standalone DLCs come out for it, and they support and expand, but you choose what level you want to play on, you choose what style. Like, games now are just sort of like blob together, and it's like, now we're going to tweak this bit here, and that's going to affect this bit here, but I liked how it was before. Why are you changing it? Like, I've no say of it. You are saying that my opinion doesn't matter after I've given you money.
There's a whole thing with art and artists, though, isn't it, about how they want like something to come out and be received because it's their product and they should make it how they want, and like, we shouldn't be like, oh, we need it like this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that's just two sides of the same coin.
That's totally valid. For me, that would be totally valid if it was something other than a monetary loop.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, the monetary side of it is different. It's just if they're changing graphics or adding things in or taking things out that are just no control over.
Yeah.
I think they should have a sort of level of free reign over being able to adapt their game, but not to a point where they're just trying to like milk the cash cow for it.
Well, we might as well segue into like the idea of rushing games to market, because like, you know, you mentioned WWE 2K20. Like, there's so many games, and this generation made it worse than ever, where games do, as soon as it's in like a beta state, it's out there full price. Like, let's cash in on this as soon as possible. And that'll like 100% comes from the publishers. It's very rare that'll come from a creative side, someone who's actually coding the thing. If anything, they'll be asking for more time. But then things just get put out because we might as well cash in as soon as possible.
Like, we've said this many, many times, I don't think that there's a single developer out there who wants to put out a game in a broken state, because it is their credibility and their job potentially that could be on the line. Mm-hmm. It is always going to be the publishers or the license holders that force things out before that they're ready. But 2K especially has been in a really just bad position. We've spoken many times over the state of WWE 2K20 and how utterly broken it is now with the latest patches that have come out that broke it even further.
They've already like given up on it at this point. Yeah. Like, staff are leaving in double digits.
And you know what? It reminds me of, do you remember when Batman Arkham Knight came out and there was a huge issue with PC? I can't remember what the issue exactly was, but it was genuinely...
You would fall through the floor, Jules.
Oh, there we go then. a pretty big issue. It was utterly broken, and instead of patching it, Warner Brothers did the cost analysis and said, we're not going to make the money back from doing this patch, so... leave it broken. Utterly shambolic.
Well, that happened with Battlefield 4, where it was just like they couldn't fix it, and then the turnaround came that DICE had to work on the next project, so they just left it. And that was the case with the Master Chief Collection as well. It eventually did get fixed, but it literally took, I'm going to say, 5 years. Maybe 5 years. Maybe four, I guess it was last year. But still, that game released broken. It was broken in Halo, and it was like, what the hell are you guys doing? 343 had to move on to Halo 5, and then it was only after that when they eventually freed up enough time and money, I guess, to go back and just make Halo work again.
Hasn't Halo...
Which is ridiculous.
Because Halo went onto PC or something like very fairly recently, didn't
it? It's totally fine now.
Yeah, totally fine now.
But it literally took years.
Years. Yes. Like, we shouldn't allow that. Like, no. It's. I know it's easy for us to sit here and be like, well, just don't buy those games, but I know I too fall into the hype cycle of being like, well, okay, Battlefield 4 was rubbish, but Battlefield 5 might be great, sort of thing. But it's just, we have to remember that these people... If they can't be bothered to fix something, that shouldn't inspire trust or product stability.
I don't know. I feel like it's hard, isn't it? Because it's like you say, it's not these developers who are the problem. It's rushing things out for money. And there's such a demand on the game industry now. It's gotten so popular. It's grown so big. There's so many more people coming to it and expecting different things and expecting them quickly. And they have to try and match the supply and demand cycle, and things go wrong along the way. Like, as we know, stuff goes wrong along the way. You have to do your best to fix it. I think that's all we can ask for, is that it does get fixed. Ideally not broken in the first place, and given the time to do it, like crunch culture and all that. Crunch culture.
The thing with with that though, like they created that environment in the first place. Like they were the ones, you know, it's like they're the ones inflating the budgets. Like, you know, like, well, the graphics are the new best thing. It's 4K resolutions. We need to put more time into this. Like, you know, they create an environment where it is the next big thing, and they're the ones who choose when they show off the projects. I mean, unless they get leaked.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's still, I think they are their own worst enemy sometimes.
My best advice that I could probably give anyone listening to this would be, if it's a yearly format game, if it's a serialization of a franchise, don't pre-order it.
Right.
Like, literally, it will save you so much money. Wait until it comes out, see what state it's in, and then decide to purchase it. Don't just buy it because you buy it every year. That's not a good excuse. You shouldn't you shouldn't support something if you don't know it's going to be there. Like, I only pre-order games now that are either... like indie games that I've been following for a while, or single games that are new IPs that I have no experience of, and I think, okay, this is something I want to take a risk on. But I don't want to give money to EA or 2K.
I will give money to Bethesda every time that I announce something new. I'm like, have it, why not? Yeah. I'll pre-order it.
Got your little trash bag.
Yeah, come
home.
On, open up. Like.
Because I'm just saying, like, it never ever gets released in these annualized games do not ever release in a good state. Apart from maybe FIFA, I think that's probably the one consistent one.
Assassin's Creed had a good run for a while, and then imploded on itself with Unity. But it's like, I mean, most video games, unless they're really severely reusing assets, aren't made for an annual cycle. And something like WWE is like, obviously had the big problem with the change in developers, but even before then, even when it was still Ux, they've been going downhill for years. There hasn't been a genuinely great WWE game in, like, well, this generation, really.
And that sucks.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah. It really sucks because
they should be pristine at this point as well.
Like, I love wrestling games. Like, I think that
I used to.
Like, Here Comes the Pain, Know Your Role, like, Attitude. Mm-hmm. Back then, that was like the glory day, the heyday of like arcade sort of bash-ups. And even when they moved into the simulator stuff, they still had absolute gems. Like, WWE 2K12, I still maintain as a great game. Right. And also SmackDown versus Raw 2006 or whatever it was. Like, great games. But it's just the further they've gone into this weird pseudo-realistic
stuff. It's everything's so slow.
And then they've got that counter with the over-stylization of like the Bray Wyatt Carnival of Horrors and stuff like that.
Do you know what that is?
It's like the Fiend. They've got the super silly stuff.
You've gone in the hole.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get back out again. It's just, I don't pre-order it. Just don't pre-order 2K21.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, basically in that regard, I mean, that was one of the things that came out from an ex-Ukes staffer talking about like their reaction to this game is already impacting next year because they don't have the staff and things like that. I mean, Ukes have left the project now, but Visual Concepts, the NBA devs have stepped in, but it seems like 2K aren't going to yield from a yearly release cycle, so you'll just get more broken stuff next year.
But they can't because the WWE have contractually got them, like,
exactly
by the gonads to just keep doing it. But like, do you remember what the name of that guy was, who was the ex-developer?
Oh god, not specifically. We did the video on him.
I suggest just trawling back through our news things and trying to find it, because this
I suggest watching every video.
Yeah,
that would really help us out, actually.
The reason why is because he actually went back to the games that he worked on and plays through all of the career modes and tells you how the creative decisions were made. It's actually genuinely really interesting.
Yeah.
He put out the first one quite recently, and it's actually really good to watch.
Actually, very quick resolution that I didn't have written down, but a good point, is that I think the industry should show off more. Like, we do so many making of docs in film, and you get to, you know, the insight into how those ideas came to fruition. Very rarely you'll get that in gaming. Like, Double Fine did a really... some of these things are so genuinely recommendable. Double Fine Adventure, which is like a 20-part YouTube series with Tim Schafer breaking down exactly how they made Broken Age. Sony do a few little roundtable interviews with like Neil Druckmann and some of their first-party people, but they sort of like abandoned it. No Clip as well, Daniel Dwyer's stuff. He literally does like, you know, fan-funded documentaries on certain games and stuff. That should be something that comes alongside as many games as possible, stuff.
It'll get there, won't it? Especially since I feel like... we haven't had good video game movies for a long time. We never really have. I think
No, she's definitely right there, mate.
Have you not seen Doom Insurrection?
I love the Doom movies. But I think we haven't had an amazing one.
No.
And I think once we crack that, then the film and TV market becomes... TV with The Witcher, that's a really, really good stepping stone for the industry to go, okay, we can branch into this and draw more people back this way and show off all the wonderful things that it does on the inside-outside documentary side. I think once it cracks the film TV industry with a really good, interesting, engaging thing like The Witcher, which you should all go and watch.
Should you go see it?
This is another podcast. I haven't watched a single one.
Cavill's really good in it. Okay. Henry Cavill's the
don't
only good thing in it.
It's bad.
It's really bad.
Is it?
Yeah. You've seen it.
Ah. I like the game so much. I was just excited to
see it. I know,
that's
what was my thing. And I was like, actually, this is really cool.
Wait, no.
We'll talk about this after.
We will.
Loads of people I know said it's really good.
Well, loads of people I know said it's really good, but they're all wrong.
Oh, so it's a Scott take.
No.
I'm scared.
Just look at any response to it online. It's very three star. It's so meh. We're also like dying to have something good after Game of Thrones that we're convincing ourselves this is good, and it's not.
Anyway,
2020.
The Witcher, it's a really good stepping stone for the industry to jump off and go, okay, we can make series out of this. Mm-hmm. There's all this lore and source material that can be expanded upon, extrapolated upon, and spun off from, and done in a really good, engaging way. Perhaps like The Witcher, I don't know anymore. Then I think that'll be the time where we get more coming back from it. Because documentary obviously is, I feel like it's in cycles of what people are interested in sort of things. Yeah. So as soon as you get gaming into the forefront, you'll get tons of them.
Mm-hmm. The thing is as well, is that if you do that, you actually start to make something, which I think it could potentially be a side New Year's resolution for the industry, is that making heroes of the people who make our games, because we are so quick to bash the publishers, and because they are faceless, it's very easy to tackle them. And when they do stand out and make mistakes like Todd Howard, it's very easy to have like a public figure to mock. Mm-hmm. But we need gaming heroes. We need people to step up and do things right, the right way. Like Hideo Kojima, as much as Death Stranding has polarized people, he's clearly the right sort of person because he's auteur, he's out there, he's got so many friends in Hollywood. He's clearly a nice guy. Yeah. He's like a very hardworking individual. It's like we need more people like that who actually stand for something in the gaming industry and are able to move it forward, because it's their visions that will pull the industry in new directions. Mm-hmm. Like if we have somebody come out and say, hey, this isn't just going to be a military shooter covered in brown, it's going to be a military shooter with a message, aka like Spec Ops The Line or something, and move it that way, then hopefully the industry will react to that in a positive way.
Yeah, like the idea of having industry spokespeople is like something that kind of waxes and wanes. Like for a while there was like Ken Levine, and you had like obviously Neil Druckmann for Naughty Dog, like Cliffy B, like there was a good few.
There are
most of them have went away though.
Like, there are, don't get me wrong, there's some absolute assholes.
Peter Molyneux did no favors.
Yeah, like or like John Romero when he just went off the rails.
Yeah.
But they became public figureheads, and it's like those rock star sort of status.
Rock star of the gaming.
What buried Romero.
But I genuinely think that we need more of that. We need the sort of maybe some more outspoken, outlandish figures to draw eyes onto it and push it in like creative and interesting directions.
Yeah, considering how much sway, like the thing is Death Stranding, for as much as it's divisive, like the fact that game got made is the best thing about it. Yeah. Even though I do think there's positive to the game itself, the fact that someone like Kojima was able to go to Sony and be like, I'm going to make a game about delivering packages and wandering around for ages. Like, I love that that's a thing.
Yeah.
If there was more, like if that individual is bankable, it allows for a bigger diversity in genres and ideas, which that was another point that I had is just that the industry this generation fell back on so many bankable formulas to the point where you look at a trailer or a bit of gameplay footage and you know exactly how something's going to control, you know exactly how it's going to play. Something like Assassin's Creed The Division, like every cover shooter is nigh on identical.
Yeah.
Loot systems, the exact same loot system is prevalent across the board. That stuff really started to like grind on me after a while, where I was like, I just feel like put off by it. And so like I gravitate more towards indie stuff and one-offs.
More experimental, like different out there games definitely would be my New Year's resolution for the gaming industry. Just please keep on doing the weird stuff. Yeah. Get Hideo Kojima to do everything. Like even if it doesn't work, like Death Stranding didn't
work. Get him to do everything.
No, not him, but you know what I mean? Like Death Stranding didn't work for me. I wasn't a fan of the game, but that it exists at all, I'm very thankful for, and that it can continue to push people in different directions and go, okay, this is so weird and so strange to have as a AAA title. What else can we do with that sort of branding blockbuster sort of gaming stuff that we can do? I'm just saying lots of do stuff things, please make.
No, I know what you mean.
No, but there are things that we've talked about, like in the office and stuff in general. And I remember thinking that going through Death Stranding, I was like, I'm so glad this got made.
Yeah.
Because it does stand out. And it's like, you like roll up the PS4's exclusive library and it's like, it is incredibly unique and original. And I love that. I fell the hell off Death Stranding in the closing hours. It's an absolute tie fire, but it's great until then.
That it is there to do that.
And that's the thing.
I'd rather watch a game absolutely fall on its ass and make an idiot of itself doing something exciting and new and that brings around a whole new revelation of the gaming industry than the same thing again and again. Another WWE, another FIFA, another this, that, the other. Give more Death Stranding. Please.
It's even weirder that like you have a bankable formula, you have a you know a very specific structure that you're going for on an annual basis, and then you mess it up anyway because the publishers crunch the release dates on it. It's like at some point those formulas should be immaculate, and then that should free up the ability to do the other one-offs. But I feel like a lot of like you know publishers go towards the most easily bankable stuff, which is only for the most part to focus on the AAA stuff. But you were mentioning, Jules, that you were saying like someone needs to tidy up the mobile market. This thing's got ridiculous. Right.
Maybe this is just like a personal thing. I don't know if you guys play many mobile games.
Just like rarely. Tappy ones, like real easy, nothing great. I play Stardew Valley on my phone sometimes.
Stardew on a phone?
Yeah.
Is it? I've got my PS4 and my Xbox, and I think my Switch as well. I don't know on phones.
I played on my phone. Ooh. Yeah.
Anyway.
But this is the thing.
Play Call of Duty.
Like, it's a huge market. Like the amount of money that it
Temple
makes
Run.
Is like, is it 10
Bring
ten,
that again.
10 cents? Is that who?
10 cents a massive like, Chinese conglomerate.
They are like absolutely killing it. And they do make like pretty good quality games.
PUBG
well,
and Call of Duty was both them.
Fantastic. But the problem is that there is an absolute wild west going on with terms of like what people can get away with and what they're doing. Like the amount of like legally dubious copyright infringing games that are out there is alarming.
I love when Flappy Bird came out and it was just sort of like, I don't know, Whappy Bird or
Flippy
Bard or whatever. It's like, okay, good.
And it's just kind of like that sort of like is everywhere. Uh-huh. And it's rife with horrible microtransactions, pay to win scenarios, paywalls, everything. Mm-hmm. It is the worst like extremism of like bad gaming on that side.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody needs to come in and basically just scoop out all the crap and start actually making sense of what's going
that
on.
Stuff, it is interesting with that because I remember there was an old interview with Colin Moriarty from who used to work for Kind of Funny and like, someone who was like a figurehead for organizing those storefronts. Mm. And he was saying that like, you know, you have infinite digital shelf space, so why not allow any creative to put their thing on the shelf? And that's true. But then you also get the knock-on effect of like, well, some people who just want to try and nickel and dime people are just going to make stuff that is a microtransaction fest or whatever. And you end up with some of the worst examples of that stuff. But I like the idea of an infinite shelf space place. Yeah. But I just think that, like you said, the mobile market is the worst example of it. The thing that annoys me is that loads of bigger games, AAA stuff, the main gaming industry takes influence from that, and that's why you see so many like, microtransaction storefronts.
I will always love Square Enix because but back in the day, Squaresoft, my boys, you know, Final Fantasy series, like Parasite Eve, they were the dons, but I will never forgive them for Final Fantasy All the Bravest. It is...
Oh god, that stupid side scrolling thing!
I've realized
that from my mind.
It quite possibly is the worst example I've ever seen of mobile gaming in any form. Mm-hmm. You have no control over your party. You pay for randomized loot box stuff that will maybe unlock a character you want. Mm. You don't. There's no gameplay. You literally just tap on the figure and they do their attacks. That's it. And they die, and you have no control over what attacks they do. They just go.
Yep.
Do. That's it. That's all the game is. Like, and I sat there and I was just like, you're destroying the brand. Why?
Like Square have had like a really they do have a bunch of nefarious practices. Yeah. Like, they have some legendary titles, and I adore Final Fantasy VII like with all my heart and everything. But yeah, they've got some bad stuff. I mean, even the new Final Fantasy VII remakes figures got put online. You have to buy them out of a blind box. You only pay for one of five. And it's like, what are you doing?
They make silly mistakes.
Yeah.
Like I love them, but I just feel like there's a disconnect again between what the public wants and what they think that they can get away with.
Love it.
And it's like that whole practice of, do you remember the pre-order bonus system
for Deus Ex? That's what I was going to say.
It was abysmal.
Augment your pre-order.
And like, but this is great because on paper you go, this is great. This actually like could allow people customizing and they get more kind of like Kickstarter-y style things. Mm. But in practice, the moment you put it into practice, you're like, oh, this is just really cash grab.
Yeah, and it was really just like, encourage your friends to pre-order the game.
Yeah, just
like,
I think Kickstarter is like, a thing for New Year's resolutions is another good one though, because I think that's a really good way for indie games to get funded and for everyone to get things back from them.
Yes.
I think more focus on maybe that side of the industry would be good and more grassroots things coming up.
Like, yeah, well, I was going to say the downside to the crowdfunding stuff is the people who take the money and run.
Yeah.
Like with I think Peter Molyneux, I think I'm pretty sure 22 Cans, like
was
his development studio,
Goddess
was initially kickstarted or crowdfunded. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's been the case for a handful of titles that have just managed to get the money and then just not delivered.
Wasn't there an issue with Fig as well, which is the one that who's the guy? Tim Schafer from Psychonauts. Yeah, he was using Fig, and it's somehow linked to some shady practices.
This is not me accusing them.
This is just what I've heard.
The thing with Schafer is a wider thing though, is that usually with Kickstarters or crowdfunding, happened with Shenmue 3, that like a project gets big enough and a publisher goes, well, we'll finish that off, and it's like, and that's a weird quandary if you've backed that game as you're part of the crowd that got it off the ground, and a publisher comes in and finishes the rest, does the rest of the project. And where does that leave you as a backer, like in terms of the ethics of it?
Mighty Number 9 is the fans. They literally had enough money to not only fund the game, but then they just started using that money to fund other projects. And it's just like, that's shady. What I've backed. Want to give you money to then go off and on like a personal jaunt.
You know what? Forget Kickstarter then. Forget
it. No. The positives.
Just saying the positive definitely outweigh the
My beloved Shovel Knight came from crowdfunding, so that's fine. Also, Bloodstained did as well. I think
Can I just say how good Bloodstained is?
Fingers coming out.
It is out. It is a fantastic game. If you like your Castlevania stuff, like, this game is just so good. I played that just before I went on the Christmas break because I was doing it for a boss list.
Nice.
And I was just like, how have I slept on this? this is brilliant.
It's they were totally. That's another thing with Kickstarter stuff, is that it can fill the gaps that the AAA industry goes away from. We talked about diversity of genres, but loads of Kickstarter projects have filled those gaps. Like Bloodstained is the 2D Castlevania that Konami won't do anymore. Yeah. Dangerous Driving is the Burnout sequel that Criterion aren't allowed to do right now. And so things like that can kind of help. But I think going forward, we're yet to sort of get the perfect version of crowdfunding.
Speaking of diversity, just on that, like, I would just like to say, I would love to see the gaming industry keep moving towards diversifying roles and heroes, protagonists.
Of course,
I'm loving the fact that at this current state of gaming, we're seeing more and more representations of our actual societal progression. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's great.
My thing with that is not being afraid to tackle certain subject matters as well. Like, I adore what Celeste brings to the industry. I adore that Hellblade was able to, both of those games tackling mental health.
I cannot wait for this.
So
very
good.
Specific ways.
Hellblade 2 is going to be so good. I'm really excited.
It looks pretty sick.
The first one was fantastic at going, okay, this is a really specific niche, but also applicable to a wide range of things. Like, it did the small and the big in perfect ways with the mental health message. It was great.
So that's just a handful of our sort of New Year's resolutions for the industry itself, but let us know what you would pick and choose down in the comments below. For now, though, I've been from WhatCulture.com. This has been the WhatCulture Gaming Podcast, and I've been joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Ash Millman.
Thank you for having me also.
We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
The witch is bad, don't bother.
Why? Why do it?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.